connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for
a computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
I finally made it. Just one last door to go, and then I'll meet the king, who I've been told is a very friendly person. I made all those friends. There's that flower that I haven't seen in a while. There was Vinny Vine Sauce and Joel Vine Sauce, which I used to think were the same person, but I guess they're not. And who could forget the lovable skeleton, which you already knew about them. All right, let's go through this door. It's about time.
All right, just going to water some flowers here. You say...
Excuse me? Hello?
Chat, sorry, someone in chat just said they've seen a flower talk. Were you talking about echo flowers? I saw a flower talk. Yeah, it said to me, "Hey, dingus."
Excuse me? Are you the king?
Oh, yeah, sorry, hang on, chat, someone's here. Hey, what's up?
Wait, hold on. Are you who I think you are?
Well, I mean, that depends. Are you who I think you are?
Who are you? Let's say at the same time.
All right, yeah. What? Yeah, that, good idea. I like this idea. All right. 1, 2, 3.
Matt Germa. From Netzer. Oh, you're Germa. Can you give me like a wink?
I mean, I just did wink at you, but you know, it really isn't audible.
How about like a look at me? Can you give me a look at me?
Yeah. Look at me. I'm Germa.
I think this is the fake Germa. Wait, hold on. You're number 13, aren't you?
No, I'm actually Germa number 985.
No, this isn't right. This isn't right. You're not the real Germa.
What do you mean I'm not the real Germa?
You're not... The real Germa would have had a way better look at me. Even I can do a better look at me. Look at me! See? Come on. I could... That's it. I haven't fought a single person yet. This time we have to fight.
All right, fine. You know what? Yeah, all right. You know what? Chat, impromptu fighting stream then. You know what? This guy says I'm not the real Germa. Well, you know what? Guess what? I did not make myself become a simp for this.
You said you became a simp? I thought you couldn't say that on Twitch anymore.
No, you can only... Oh, well, you almost got me to say it, huh? Got me to say the banned word.
Ah, yes.
The Ritz word.
The Ritz word. Crackers.
That's it.
Oh no, I've been caught in the trap! Now I'll never escape the underground. A.K.A. Sweden.
Sorry, hang on, I'm seeing chat currently. I'm not gonna destroy the mercy button, chat. Then they'd have literally no choice but to kill me. What, you want me to die, chat, huh?
I mean, I was going to fight you anyways, because I'm pretty sure you're not the real Germa. Also, why would the real Germa be in Sweden?
What, that's where all the streamers are. Didn't we establish this in the previous episode?
I guess it's true. Something doesn't seem right. You know what, I'm just gonna see if the barrier even is real. I bet you I could probably just walk right through it.
Wait, no, don't go through the red curtain that says barrier on it.
You can't stop me.
Well, I can stop you if I do this. Whoop-cha!
What did you just do? I actually couldn't see because my back was turned.
I just destroyed the mercy button.
Oh, okay. So you do want to fight?
Yeah. Looks like we've got to fight
now. I kind of don't want to fight.
Oh,
I feel
well,
bad about it.
I mean, you should. I guess you should have thought about that before.
Gonna load my save real quick.
Sorry, chat. Did you say something about a talking flower? That's ridiculous.
Hey, it's me, I'm the Talking Flower Man!
Oh my god, you're a Talking Flower Man?
Actually, no. I was just wanting to do a joke. Sorry, let me reload my safe again.
No, chat. Chat, sorry. Did you say something about a talking flower? Flowers can't talk, chat. Jeez.
And just like this, Matt endlessly reloaded his save, unable to think of a better way to end the scene. Was it the real Germa? We may never know. Some say Matt is still reloading his save to this day. This has been The Twilight Zone.
Oh, man. I'm so happy that we're over with the worst bit.
Yeah.
This is a bunch of streamers that Matthew definitely knows way better than I do. But I'm the one who has to do the bits.
This was a very funny turn of events. So, yeah, this is NetSurfer Pro. I'm Matt, and with me is...
Galen, of course.
And we're going to talk about Undertale for the last time ever.
Yep. Probably we're never going to speak about Undertale again. We're going to pretend it doesn't exist after this episode.
Yes, and of course, this is the third part of a three-part series. Make sure you listen to the other two before going to this one, because I think we're just going to talk about some pretty big spoiler stuff this time.
Yeah.
Including some more general topics, one of which I want to get out of the way before we get too far in.
Yeah, this is... We've kind of been making this under the assumption that you have played Undertale and understand it, but obviously there is one big run that we have not yet talked about that we are going to talk about, the No Mercy run. If you have not done it, look up a playthrough of it or something.
Or something, yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, we're going to be talking now roughly as though you kind of know what we're talking about.
Yes, exactly. So I want to really quickly, before we get too deep into the woods, talk about comedy.
Yes.
In games. This is sort of a personal sort of theory, I guess. Not really theory, but an application of theory. I don't know. But I feel like there's three sort of main forms of comedy in video games.
Yes.
Which is sort of stems from the fact that video games are a interactive medium. There are jokes told to the player, which are jokes where the player has no input into the joke. It is more like a typical joke you would hear at, like, a comedy night. You know, it's somebody telling you something. It could also be something that's visually shown. It doesn't have to be using words. But overall, it's, you know, something where the player doesn't really have any role other than an audience. There's jokes found by the player, which have some amount of player input in order to sort of discover them, but otherwise are... Sort of a comedic joke in its own right. Like, a setup that requires the player to do something first. And this includes things just like movement. We mentioned that there's a lot of times where there will be something just off screen that's part of the joke. And I would kind of count that as this, where the player's participation in the moving of the camera is what gives the joke its own sort of setup and punchline.
Yeah. So, like, an example might be, like, the sands in the valley, where, like, he's on one side. When you come into the screen, you walk down to the other side, and then you'll inevitably walk back to the other side to be like, wait, did he just teleport? And he did. And yeah. So it's like, you know, the player initiates part of the joke, but the joke is still actively told by the video game.
Yes. Another example is just, like, whenever a video game, like, acts like it's going to give you a big reward and then gives you, like, nothing. That's sort of another example of this, where the player's interaction with the game and the object give it meaning, but the player doesn't have input into the output.
Yeah.
Which, compare it to the last one, jokes the player plays on themselves, where the player has full input and full agency, and the joke is just a consequence of sort of a rule presented. The most obvious one being, like, Lesser Dog, how you can just keep petting it until its head goes off screen and then back down. That is sort of a joke where the player is shown a consequence of an action, and then it's up to the player to take it as far as they want.
Yeah. For I think, a non-Undertale example, I think an example I immediately think of is... The Yiga clan in Breath of the Wild, where I've seen, you know, videos where people will mess with them by, like, setting up something to run into them with the emergent game mechanics, and then we'll talk to them to activate them, and then they'll immediately die after the dialogue ends. We're like, this is not something that the game itself has, like, specifically set up, but it is emergent through the things you can interact with in the game, so it's kind of entirely player-driven.
Right. Another game that tends to do this is Hitman. So, like, there will be jokes that are just, like, wordplay and puns that Agent 47 says. You know, it's like, you know, a guy will come in for a haircut and he'll be like, you know, I just went a little off the top. And 47's like, yes, relax and I'll get a big weight off your shoulders.
Yeah.
Or, and then there is jokes where, like, it's either an Easter egg found by the player or maybe, like, there is, just like if it, like a weird interaction with a machine that is meant for a scripted assassination method. And then there's also the emergent things like the fact that if you throw a briefcase at somebody and they run away, the briefcase will still try to hit their head. And yeah. So it'll home in on them. Or like, you know, you can put down banana peels. And if you do that over a ledge, you can kill somebody with it.
Yeah.
That is a situation where the player is given tools and they know the consequence of the tools, but the comedy comes in that they are able to apply those tools in a creative way.
Yeah. This honestly, like, this is a topic that, like, would be its own kind of wonderful discussion. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe this is something to talk on a NetSurfer Pro to talk more broadly about.
A talk surfer show?
A talk surfer show. Because, like, yeah, I there are immediately so many examples I can think of, like, I don't know, Red Faction or something with its destruction mechanics, or, you know, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can kind of think of it as sort of a sliding scale of how much agency the player has in the joke. That's sort of how I would describe it in sort of a brief way.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting that a big part of Undertale's comedy comes in the gamification and how it uses game systems for jokes. A big one being dialogue options, where, like, a character will ask a question and you're given two dialogue options to choose from, but both are funny. And so not only is the joke a written comedy, like, dialogue, but it's also the joke is that you are forced into saying something weird or stupid or funny because that's how games work.
Yeah.
You have a limited number of dialogue choices. So, like, would you smooch a robot? All of the answers are heck yeah. You have to choose heck yeah no matter what. And so the joke is both that you're forced to do so, but that it's also in the form of this, like, quiz game.
Yeah. You know, this actually kind of brings up an interesting idea as well, which is that, a big theme of Undertale is player choice and, like, the impact it truly has on the world. But this is kind of inversed in the next game, Deltarune, where seemingly, without delving into it too much, the first chapter literally says your choices don't matter in this world.
Mm-hmm.
We have yet to see how that emerges. But it's kind of interesting going back and seeing how, like, one of the funny things you can do in Undertale is, like, try to do the quote-unquote rude options, which will ultimately, in many ways, give you the same results, especially with the bosses. So, like, if you try to insult Papyrus, he takes it as, like, wow, you're trying to make me feel better about not killing you, you know? So, like, it's interesting that, like, even in Undertale, there's many instances where, like, the player choice doesn't matter, quote-unquote. You still get the same sort of pacifist results with rude interactions.
Yeah. Though, I think that's a good segue to talk about player choice in Undertale.
Yes.
In the last route that we take. So, this is sort of hinted at by the legends found in Waterfall. You know, they talk about the angel that will descend from the surface and free them, but they also repeatedly mention the angel of death as a theory for what the angel is. And that's sort of a hint that's like, maybe, well, like, what would happen if I did just kill every monster?
Yeah.
Like, clearly there's things that happen if I kill some of them, like they don't show up in a restaurant or something. What if I did it for all of them? And thus begins No Mercy.
Yep. It does have another name. We
might say it accidentally.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. It's just not great given current events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's another name that the community has kind of given it. But we're gonna try and stick to No Mercy.
Mm-hmm. That's what the episode will be titled.
Yes.
Or is titled from your perspective, future listener. Yeah, so essentially the conditions for this are to kill every monster, which means you have to intentionally get in fights by, like, walking back and forth and getting the random fights to activate. And you do that until you literally can no longer. It's like once you kill the last enemy in an area, the music slows down and gets like depressed.
Yeah.
Very moody. And then like when you try to get a fight afterwards, it'll say, but nobody came.
Which are kind of the arc words of genocide.
You just said it. Oh, well, okay. Damn it. Well, now we're off the hook if we say it again.
Well, shit.
Yeah. Those are the arc words for the route. And then also you do have to kill every boss.
Yes. Which like, especially if you have done the like neutral and then true pacifist routes is very difficult to do.
Yeah. Because they're already your friends, right? I mean, it was hard enough to kill Toriel.
Yeah.
Now you had to do that to Papyrus. Yeah. So there's a lot more to it, of course. Like you can steal from shops because you kill the shopkeepers.
Yeah, like if you kill everyone before like Snowden, you get to Snowden and like there's just a note that says like please don't hurt my family.
Yeah. So the requirements for doing this route kind of change things as you go. Like you'll skip puzzles sometimes, or like dialogue will change pretty heavily to react to you. The big things are there are a few different bosses as you go through the game.
Yeah. And when we say a few, really a few.
Really just two.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first one being Undyne the Undying. This is sort of interesting because since in the pacifist route you have to run away from her, you don't really have to deal with her attacks too much beyond just like blocking the spears. So like you actually do have to fight Undyne for real.
Yeah.
She also has a new outfit, which has some hearts on it, you know, major motif visually. She has a new song that's pretty good.
It's really interesting because, like, Undyne is, I think, the first big imposing figure you meet.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is really silly. And, like, even the like, scarier looking monsters are quite silly. But Undyne is, like... Undyne is, in neutral route, the first, like, threat.
Mm-hmm.
We've even mentioned this before. She is kind of, like, the first one you literally have to fight. And, you know, you do win by running away, which mm-hmm. is funny. But, like, you still have to go through a number of her like...
Patterns?
Patterns is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
But, so, like, she's the first... villain, quote unquote, you face as far as like using typical terms for like hero villain in video games, RPGs, whatnot. Whereas in this route, she's a shonen protagonist.
Yeah,
she literally like is fighting for her friends so much that she refuses to die.
Mm-hmm.
Like you are the bad guy.
Yeah, it's kind of awesome because. In like the regular or pacifist route, her speech she gives is like very clearly her just trying to psych herself up for killing a kid. Like, you know, the whole thing about like all the spirits of the monsters. It's her like internalized propaganda that she is spouting back out.
Yeah.
But in this, it's legit, like legit the hopes and dreams of all the monsters in the underground are resting on her to fight you.
Yeah.
Her speech is like really similar in both routes, but it's a whole different meaning.
Yeah, it rings invariably true in the No Mercy route.
Yeah. Another big thing is that, so, for one thing, I want to talk about Gerson Boom again.
Yes.
The smartest guy. So, he's one of the few shopkeepers that isn't gone by the time you meet him. And he explains, he says, like, it's safer for me in here than it is out there. I know how this world works.
Yeah. Which
implies that Gerson is aware of the mechanics of being a shopkeeper.
Yeah. Which also, like, number one, I didn't realize until you had explained the origin of Gerson Boom's name. That's also a really fucking great reference to, like, his origin, yeah. his name origin.
You can't hit me if I'm in here.
Yeah. But, like, at the same time, yeah, exactly like you said, he clearly has a connection to the sort of, like, the people who are more meta-aware, despite being a random shopkeep.
Yeah. He does also mention the Deltarune when you talk to him in Pacifist. He is like, he knows more than he lets on.
Yeah.
He's also very noticeably dead in Deltarune. In the game Deltarune.
Oh, yeah. Which,
he's like a fantasy author. He's like Tolkien.
God.
In the Deltarune canon.
Someone call up MatPat. I need that explained to me.
Yeah, no, Gerson is cool. He knows more than he seems. And he is very cleverly like, I don't want to talk to you. I'm just going to stay in my shop because you can't attack me in here. Also, after a while, it turns out most of the monsters have evacuated. I believe they evacuate to Alphys's like underground lab. Because when you get there, like very noticeably, Alphys isn't at her lab. The hole in the wall that Metaton was in is already gone and broken. And the elevator you can't like interact with. The bathroom door. Yeah, there's a lot of other things where like you skip over a ton of puzzles. You lose the ability to like actually go through dialogue the guard husbands. There it is. That like I think you just kill them without talking to them. Something like that. And eventually, you know, you make your way up. You get to the Undertale section, but instead it is called Flowey Tale. And Flowey appears to try to convince you not to finish what you're doing.
Well, he does. Well, sort at of. First, so he eventually does that, but when he starts telling you his story, effectively.
Right.
About how he became aware.
Yeah.
And it's literally a story of a player getting bored with a game.
Mm-hmm. Well, so first, it's Azrael dying.
Yeah.
And waking up as a flower and shouting for help, not knowing what's going on. And that's when he drops the, but nobody came again. And then, yeah.
Yeah. And then he gets into the fact that he was aware of the game mechanics and realized he had the ability to save and load.
Mm-hmm.
And, another small detail is that at this point, the whenever you look in the mirror, it says it's me player name.
Mm-hmm.
In the neutral and the pacifist routes, it has the beautiful words of despite everything, it's still you.
Yeah.
And in this it's so perfect, given the twist that's coming up, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Flowey continues expounding and kind of and again, it's the story of a player getting bored with a video game.
Flowey does everything differently every time. Kills some characters, leaves other ones alive, kills, you know, some people, doesn't kill anybody, tries to fix all their problems, is able to fix all their problems, but ultimately can't meaningfully change anything and just resets.
Yeah.
But when the player appeared, Flowey could no longer reset. And Flowey thinks that this is because of the influence on the player character. We kind of name drop them in the last episode, Kara or Kara or Kara's Flowers. Hey, Kara's Flowers. It's funny. Maroon 5. The spirit of the adopted son, you know, Azrael's adopted brother, is sort of following the player character throughout the game.
Yeah.
And Azrael Flowey realizes this and is basically, I can't remember the exact, like, track the emotions follow.
He's kind of like, he is excited. Like he's telling you the story and then he begins getting excited because he's like, but you know, this is like great. Cause you know, like you're not only are you an unexpected element, but like you're also, you know, with you, we aren't confined to the underground anymore. We can go out to this entire world and you know, you could kill everything. Yeah. And he kind of has the realization that you can kill everything.
Including Flowey.
Yeah. And he suddenly realizes, oh, you're probably going to kill me if we meet. And he kind of like immediately starts begging for his life until you get to the last hallway.
Yes, the Hall of Judgment. And this is one of the most notable parts of the game. One of the most notorious parts.
Yes.
Because this is where you meet Sans.
Yep. You meet Sans as he truly is.
Yes. So, okay. There's a whole lot to talk about the Sans fight. First off, Megalovania, the song that was first in the Halloween ROM hack, then in Homestuck, then in this game. Great theme. There's a song on the OST called Song That Might Play When You Fight Sans that does not play. Yes. And is just there to mask the fact that Megalovania plays instead.
Yeah.
Obviously, now everyone knows Megalovania is Sans' theme.
Yeah, it's part of the beauty of Undertale that, like, even if you data mine a lot of it, there is, like, if you data mined it and just looked at the code, you would not necessarily be able to tell, like, actually, you know, you would not be able to spoil the genocide route. Yeah. No mercy route.
Whatever. Fuck. Yeah. So, it's kind of great. I did want to bring up that a lot of the No Mercy route is like a creepypasta.
Yes.
The like evil spirit inside the game creepypasta. Especially the parts where you lose control and you just like proceed and kill things.
Yeah.
Which is a theme that gets, yeah.
Proceed.
Yes. I very, very important word choice there. But like, this is sort of a whiplash in that regard where it goes from like the really creepy and eerie mood of very emptiness, you know, nobody's around, to just like big fucker fight.
Yeah.
Sans is the hardest fight in the game. It is your reward for doing the No Mercy route, is you get to fight Sans.
Yep.
And Sans is kind of a really magical fight because he fucks with the format so much.
Yeah.
However, he is like Papyrus in that your main goal is to let him do his whole speech.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really cool for one thing, his similarities with Papyrus. Obviously, he has bone attacks, he has blue attacks, you know, those are similar. The main different weapon that he has are these, like, laser blasters, which look similar to the one Azrael uses in his boss fight.
Yeah, they're similar to the
like, hand cannon.
Yeah, I think we had mentioned it, we name dropped it in the last episode, the, like, determination extraction machine.
Kind of, yeah, kind yeah. of. Or when Azrael does the suck attack,
yeah.
It's that head.
But yeah, his portion is a lot of platforming, a lot of dodging the big like fucker attacks, as yeah. you mentioned, the big blasts.
Famously, like, he uses this really like fast paced attack first thing before you even get your option menu.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't ever understood why people don't use their best attack first.
Yeah, which is fucking brilliant, of
And
course.
It's another callback to the Papyrus fight.
Yeah.
Because Papyrus, you know, waited so long to unveil his blue attack.
That reminds me, I can find no evidence of this being a real thing, but it's probably from an Undertale fan comic that I've read. Which, yes, I've read an Undertale fan comic. I'm trash.
Who hasn't?
Exactly. Who hasn't? And I wanted it so hard to be a thing. This is why I, like, so legitimately kind of wanted to do this route first. Just, like, with a completely fresh save. Was that, the fight begins, and, the character dies, and Sans says, I guess you never learned about blue attacks, huh? And I wanted that so hard to be a real thing, because, like, that would be so perfect if, like, you just from a completely fresh save did it. You would literally never learn what Papyrus's actual powers are. And so, you know, like, a big part of Sans's fight is basically just kind of a souped up Papyrus fight. So, like, that would be so absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's probably just from an Undertale fan comic. Anyway.
Oops. Yeah, so eventually he fucks with it even more. One of the best things is that he will attack you in the menu.
Yes.
Your heart cursor you use to select things, like fight or act, also, like, can take damage because he will shoot bones at you.
Yeah.
And so you have to scroll through the menu in time with the bullets to not get hurt.
There's a very specific, parting of these two sections. There's a second phase, basically, mm-hmm. where, like, after what is still kind of a normal fight, he kind of gives a speech about, like, you know, kid, maybe you can turn around, and you get the option to spare him, and if you do, you get dunked on.
He goes, get dunked on!
Yeah. And says, if you really want to spare me, then you won't come back.
Yeah.
But if you decide not to spare him because you want to continue this route, then he starts to fuck with the menus, as you said. Bones start, like, rolling across the heart
yeah.
in menus, and I think another kind of shift starts happening when he starts, like, effectively loading save states.
Yeah, so throughout the fight, Sans also mentions, like, every timeline coming to an end, or, like, this timeline being a specifically weird one.
Yeah.
He also mentions that he can never go back to his original timeline, which is very important.
Yeah.
And there's a few other things he says along those lines. I don't want to say the common fan theory, but I feel like it, my reading is that he's, like, a sort of time cop. Like, you know, kind of keep making sure that the time-space continuum is running smoothly.
Yeah.
He's able to clearly to teleport and is aware of time. And he uses that in his advantage to, yeah, like, time travel through his attacks.
Yeah.
He'll be doing one attack, and then the screen will flicker black, and then when it comes back, it'll be another attack.
It's so excellent if you have done the previous one, the previous routes, because, like, you know, you've seen Sans do these kinds of things before. He has literally, like, turned the game off for a moment and then disappeared in front of you a couple of times previously. So, like, seeing him pull out his full potential in a battle is just kind of hype as hell.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It should be worth noted, you can never hurt him. All of your attacks miss.
Yes.
He just dodges out of the way.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is that, like, literally, when you try to attack him, he has one health and does one damage,
mm-hmm.
But he just moves out of the way, and he's like, what, you thought I'd just stand here and take it?
Yeah. Eventually, the goal, if you were to try to beat him, is to get him tired.
Yes.
He gets too tired, and he goes to Grilby's, using a shortcut off-screen.
He has a brilliant stroke where he's like, I've got... there's nothing like... It's some kind of joke where he's like, you're not gonna believe what's coming next. Nothing is coming next. If it's always my turn, it's never your turn.
Yeah, he holds you hostage.
Yeah.
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
Kind of is, though.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you literally, like, push, just absolutely edge the play field towards the fight button.
Yeah.
To finally actually kill him, which, like, is also a great display of determination,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Determination so strong you can move the fight field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, you do finally catch him, and he's like, well, guess I'm off to Grilby's. He bleeds. I like to imagine that's ketchup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely ketchup he had in his pocket for this exact scenario.
Wouldn't it be funny if I got stabbed and I bled?
That's stupid, Sans.
Keeping ketchup in your jacket for squib purposes.
Exactly. You're a squib now. So yeah. You just kill Asgore, right? Like, immediately?
I think he specifically mistakes you for Kara, very mm-hmm. specifically. And I think you stab him. You, like, slash him, and he kind of, like, kneels down, but then, he gets the pellets ring around him from
right.
Flowey, and then Flowey is like, see, I killed him for you. You know, we're a team, right? You don't have to do anything. And you fucking decimate Flowey.
Yeah.
Like, slash, it does the slash animation so many times until he's just a withered pixel.
Mm-hmm.
And then you meet Kara.
Yay.
Or if you have done what you should and name it after yourself, you meet Galen. Or you.
Wow, I met Galen?
You met Galen.
It's been my dream. Yeah. And Kara's fucked up.
Yeah. So Kara is like this demon.
Yeah.
Who literally is the exact, like, the exact picture of monsters, of like humans that monsters have,
mm-hmm.
of like these just terrible, terrifying, you know, beasts that just want to eradicate all monsters. But Kara wants to take it further. Kara wants to be able to escape the confines of just the game and kill everyone in the fucking world.
Yeah.
And so you, like, so they offer you a deal. You, like, you know, they're like, let me be, or no, not at this point. They're like, yeah, don't you, doesn't that sound great? And you can say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say no, they're like, oh, did you think you have a choice? Jump scare.
Yeah.
Kill.
Spooky jump scare kills you and does 9999999 times.
Yeah. And destroys the fucking game.
Yeah.
And crashes the game. Much like any good indie game does. It crashes. You
open- That sounds really rude.
Bethesda is my favorite indie game because every time I do anything, it crashes.
CD Projekt Red, the small indie company.
So yeah, it crashes, and when you load it back up, there is like literal dead air, just like wind sound effects, because there's no more game. It got destroyed, but Kara's there, and Kara will offer you a deal. You sell your soul to them to, you know, utilize it to kill everyone, and you can have the game back. And now your game is forever tainted.
Yep.
Yeah. No matter what ending you get, especially if you get the pacifist or anything, like, there will be an extra scene where Kara, like, wakes up, clearly intending to kill all the people that you have grown to love over this entire adventure.
It's even worse, because the pacifist ending ends with the barrier broken.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, wow, whoop-de-doo, you tried to get a happy ending again, too bad. That's even worse, you idiot. You fool, you invited the devil into your house.
So, this is an interesting point that someone has definitely brought up, a YouTube, like, essayist has brought up, and I really wish I remember their name. But Kara is a character within the game. Yes. But the message of Undertale is not that. It's like people treat Kara as like the antagonist, and like they are unequivocally. I mean, even before, like, if you read between the lines of, like, you know, how Kara treated Azrael and shit, like, Kara was fucking terrible.
Yeah, Kara's essentially the reason the events of the game happen.
Yeah, Kara literally, like, tried to, like died and asked to be taken to the village specifically to get Azrael killed.
Yeah.
Like, Kara fucking sucks. But Kara isn't the antagonist of the game, especially in a No Mercy run. You are. Like, the player is. It's the person who is initiating it. Like, it's the person who is treating this like an RPG that they are min-maxing. It is not the demon within the game that you sell your soul to, because you're the one selling your soul. Like, it's Moon the RPG, you know, level of meta commentary. It's like, yeah, you're the one who is intruding upon their world right now.
Yes. So here is sort of my read on the central theme of Undertale in that regard.
Yes.
I think Undertale is a game that makes a case for having emotional connections with games. Because, so, the big thing about No Mercy is it's supposed to be, like, the average gamer. You know, they kill all the monsters to grind and level up. They kill all the bosses because that's what they're supposed to do, because that's what games do.
Yeah.
But that's not really the case. Because the neutral ending exists more as the average gamer, I feel like. For No Mercy, you have to go out of your way. And the reason isn't because you're trying to, like, min-max your level. It's because you want to see what happens. And you want to see what happens because you treat the characters in the game as pieces of, like, a puzzle. But you don't treat them as characters.
Yeah.
You see them as a list of switches to be flipped and turned.
Yeah.
And that's literally what Flowey explains happened.
Yeah.
But your reward for that is the most mechanically challenging fights. That if you want to play the game purely as a mechanical experience, you do so. It eventually starts skipping dialogue because you're not reading it anyway, so you just want to get to the fights.
Yeah.
However, on the other hand, the pacifist route is about making emotional connections with characters. It's about not only using the knowledge of the characters to win their combats, but also, like, going out of your way to date the characters. Do these, like, scenes outside of combat that have no real progression of the main quest line because you're invested in the character's life.
Yeah.
And your reward is the biggest emotional climax of the game. So these are two opposite ends of the spectrum of, like, emotional investment versus mechanical investment.
Yeah.
And I think the reason, like, it worked, obviously. People love the characters in Undertale. And I view it as a way of being like, you know, you it's okay to view games as mechanical sinkholes of, like, you know, pieces and levers and switches and stuff. But that locks yourself out of getting so many experience if you only treat games like that.
Yeah, they're...
Like, there's content for doing No Mercy, because there's still a reward. Like, it's not entirely bad. It's vilified in the character's eyes, but from the designer's perspective, they give you a cool fight with good music and epic experience in WoW and Pog.
I think here's I think the contention I'm going to make. The reason that No Mercy taints your save file is essentially a small commentary on that, like, you can't always go back to enjoying something wholeheartedly when you see it as switches to be flipped.
Yes.
So, like here's an example I'm going to use is, like, speedrunning. Mm-hmm. And I want to make it perfectly clear, I revere speedrunning as an art form. I do not think it is invalid in the slightest. But, like, there's Jacob Geller, I'm going to reference. Jacob Geller made a video over rationalizing violence. And he kind of brings up speedrunning that, like, hey, in Bloodborne, you know, most speedrunners will kill the doll because it's faster to level up through the doll's corpse than to level up with the doll alive. But you do that with the knowledge that the next time you reset, it's going to be okay, because the doll's going to be there. The doll is, like, you know, emotionally speaking, if you've gotten attached to the doll while playing Bloodborne, that would be horrifying for any casual player. But, like, when you know that you are just going through the fastest route and you are doing this for the pure challenge, you know that she's going to be there again. And that's fine. Like, that is a perfectly valid way of viewing video games. But there is still, like, there is still something that kind of changes when you take that and apply it to larger scale issues. For in the Jacob Geller video, it was specifically, like, military shooters and things like that, the desensitization of violence. In Undertale, it's the, like, sentimentality aspect that, like, you know, you can't really look at these characters the same way again once you treat them purely as these are cool mechanics that interact with each other. Like, I will use a small personal example. The Last of Us 2 never really hit with me emotionally, because even though it had a robust system where, like, when you kill one guy, the AI will, like, yell out, "Oh my god, Jeremy's dead," every time it did that, it could be the most technically impressive thing in the world, but every time it did that, all I ever heard was, "Oh my god, insert persistent name, random generated Jeremy is dead."
Yeah.
Like,
it's not too different from, like, playing a beat-em-up and being like, "Oh, I just killed Sean, the biker."
Yeah.
"Oh, here's Jerry, the biker."
Yeah.
"All right, I killed Jerry." I think an example I would use is Super Mario 64. Super Mario 64 is, you know, a game about exploring these 3D worlds. And it was impressive at the time it was released. But not only is, you know, immersion in games and, like, graphical fidelity so different, but, like, people have dissected Mario 64 so far that it becomes hard to view the game as a world you explore sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I look at Bob on Battlefield, and it doesn't feel like a Battlefield where a big king is shooting cannons down at other things. It feels like, here's the part of the level with the chain chomp and I ground pound the post. Here's the part where I can get some easy coins for the 100 coin star.
Here's the part where if I can pick up a Bob-omb and clip through the fence.
Yeah, exactly. And so And, you know, this goes even further for some people. They're like, oh, this is a slope that has this very specific property. Here's a Goomba that I can use to help set my hope.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not that this is a bad way of looking at it, but I feel like, for me at least, the more I treat the game as a, like, set of physics systems and interactions, the harder it is for me to get lost in the world as just a world to explore.
Yeah. It's not that it's an invalid way of looking at it. It's that you kind of inevitably lose something when you start looking at it that way.
Yeah, you lose sort of immersion or, like, depersonalization.
You lose the imagination, yeah.
Yeah.
Of the world that you're in.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, at least with Undertale, I feel like that is the unequivocal bad route. You do get the big, cool fights. And to some people, that's going to be worth it. But the game very much, like, clearly wants you to connect with these characters on a personal basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think the fight being so difficult is also to that end. That if you were just interested in the characters because, like... Or if you were interested in the route because you wanted to see, like, if it adds to the character's depth, then... The fight will stop you.
Yeah.
In that it's like, no, this isn't for the people that care about the characters.
Yeah.
This is only for people who are specifically looking for a mechanical challenge.
I also do love, though, that, like, it becomes really trivial.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, after, I think, just the ruins, there is no fight for anything anymore. Like, everything dies in one hit. Mm-hmm. The literal only two fights you have in this route are the two really impressive ones.
Yeah.
Are your Undyne and your Sans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the opposite of all this emotional weight is Sans.
Yes.
And Megalovania. I think it's time we took a little look at... So, Sans. Megalovania.
What?
The guy from Danganronpa.
Nagito.
No. Yes. No. That different thing.
Another episode.
God. No, but I guess what I want to posit is why this especially kind of became the meme. Because, like, Sans is the funny man. Sans certainly is the funny man, and I think he kind of, like, vibes with the shitposter aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, he's literally Comic Sans, and in 2015, that was really funny.
Yeah, it's still pretty funny.
It is still pretty funny. But, like, I think that Sans kind of got co-opted by shitpost culture, and I don't mean that specifically as a negative. I think he might have lost a little bit of his magic. I think he might have gotten a little more depersonalized as he kind of just became, like, a funny shitpost because it was over that game that everyone is freaking out about. But at the same time, I don't think it's, like, a negative thing, strictly. I think it's just kind of Zoomers expressing themselves.
Yeah, so this is... There is a whole Rube Goldberg of events that I think led to this point.
Yeah.
For example, like you said, Sans is already a shitposter. He says, get dunked on. People really got into the whole boss fight part.
Yeah.
And that became... People love secrets. Yes. Which we'll talk about later as well. But the fact that that was sort of a secret boss, I think people got really excited about. You know, Sans was also secretly really awesome and cool and powerful this whole time. Sans became a fan favorite very quickly, and then because Undertale was kind of everywhere, you know, the fans were everywhere, there was a lot of high-profile Sans-related things, like the Stronger Than You parody,
yes.
Where people, somebody made a parody of Stronger Than You from Steven Universe, but with Sans and Kara, and people were thinking that that Steven Universe copied Undertale, or, you know, it's a whole thing, people have talked about it.
I mean, we also can't deny the influence of Matthew Patrick.
Yeah, MatPat made a bunch of stuff about a later thing we'll talk about, but also Sans and the Sans' Ness. I think that was near the tipping point of it, really, was Sans' Ness.
Yes.
Which is really just saying that Toby Fox was inspired by Earthbound. it didn't need to be that deep. Also, Toby Fox still doesn't like to be connected to the Halloween ROM hack that much, and that was one of the videos that caused him to tweet that.
I genuinely wonder if that video is, like, a big part of why he doesn't want like directly associated with that ROM hack anymore.
I think it's more so just an artist who has come a long way from their early stuff.
That's, yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's why he doesn't like to be called Fwug Radiation.
Yeah. Toby, don't call me Toby Fwug Radiation Fox. Fwug Radiation Fox.
Yeah. And there's also a few other things. Like, all of the Undertale fanfics seem to center around Sans. All the AUs.
Yeah.
Because he's such a malleable character that can be taken a lot of interesting ways. And more importantly, he kind of hints at the existence of multiple timelines.
Yeah.
Meaning that, you know, Underswap can be canon if you want.
Yeah. He's like, a lot of the big, like, connections to the sort of, like... he's one of the few characters who directly references the, like, meta of this game being more than itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that makes him a perfect sort of candidate for the Tumblr sexy manification.
Yeah, he's edgy and kind of brooding if you want him to be. Because, you know, you fight him after his brother dies because you kill his brother.
Yeah.
But also, it's unclear how much his brother knows about the meta stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he even kind of mentions that, like, he is even sort of very apathetic because, like, he realizes that his life could be reset at any moment.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of traits. And so, like, obviously he became very popular with fans, and from there people who dislike Undertale kind of made fun of him and shat on him. But then you have Recognition, going to the sort of Recognition meme and, like, the low res, I guess. Stuff like Loss or the Mortitoi thing from last year. Where, like, it's about hiding a pattern that is easily recognizable by people in the know. So for a while it was just, like, the eyeball, the Sans eye, where he has the little blue fire.
Yeah, or like, the first four notes of Megalovania.
Exactly, that's the more prominent one, is the do-do-do-do.
One of my favorite little, stupid little three-second videos is, it's Germa do something funny, and, like, the actual thing is he does, like, a clown honk, but it changes it so he does, her.
Yeah, it's great. And yeah, so, like, Sans has kind of gone beyond just being a character from Undertale, just due to the sheer flexibility in this, like, sheer fandom around him. And, you know, people who are being ironic want to use popular characters to be ironic.
Yeah.
It's very similar to Shrek.
Yeah.
Sans is Shrek. Fuck Ness.
Get dunked on, MatPat.
You see, it's... I don't remember the term we used for, like, a character that has surpassed the canon in fiction that they're from.
Yeah, like, the not exactly free use.
The, like, anti-character or anti-canon character. I'll have to go back and listen to that episode. The Shrek retold one.
Yeah.
But it's gotten to the point where, yeah, like, Sans could be literally put in any situation because... he has been so far removed through several layers of irony and sincerity that he just kind of is.
Yeah. He's a free intellectual property for kind of any shit poster.
Yeah.
And,
you know, much in the same way Shrek is.
Exactly.
He can fit in any situation because it will be funny.
I do love, and again, we've at the very least, Matthew has tried not to really talk about Deltarune that much. But I do love how in Deltarune, he has so much robust dialogue, specifically because he is, like, the center point of, like, you should know what's going on, right? And all of it is to extend the idea that he seemingly has no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's giving the fans the sort of, like, coffee shop AU version of Sans, which is great, but is also like, hey, but, like, we want answers.
Where's your brother?
Yeah, where's your brother?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's various theories and stuff, and I don't want to go too far into digital interactive media extrapolations right now.
Yeah.
Because we need to go into the other thing. that has digital interactive media extrapolations.
Yes, yes. This is...
the final layer.
Shrek the Final Layer.
Yes, which has Homestuck music in it.
Which ties back because Toby Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Exactly. It's full circle. So, do you remember Fun Values? We mentioned Fun Values a while ago.
If you don't remember, here's a flashback. Yeah, so there's this value called fun. It's a random number that, like, can influence various events. I'm Galen in the past. Boy, I sure hope nothing important happens in the next 2 weeks. Do I like She-Ra? I was trying to think of just an acceptable joke to make. Oh man, how awkward I was in the past 2 weeks.
I know, so much has changed since then. Yeah, so one of the main things, one of the important things that fun value can change are, there's a few characters that'll be grayed out and they'll speak about something weird. And more importantly, there's this guy that sometimes shows up. There might be like a weird door in a hallway in Waterfall, and if you walk through the weird door, you see this creepy guy.
Yeah, he's an Uboa-like, as Matthew has coined the term. Yes,
so just like I've coined Dave-likes, Uboa-likes are characters based off of Uboa, which is a NPC from Yume Nikki, the indie RPG darling. RPG horror. RPG maker horror darling.
Yes.
Uboa is just like, you know those illusions where it's like, stare at this for long enough and then look at the ceiling and you'll see Jesus. It kind of looks like that, but also not. It's just this like fucked up face.
Yeah, it's this black and white pixelated face that looks like vaguely melting, but also it's extremely like, it's extremely abstract.
It's vaguely kind of like Scream-esque.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like it's grinning, but has like an evil grin, but... it's weird. There's a lot of symbolism in Yume Nikki to unpack. This isn't an episode about that. That'll be like October or something.
Yeah.
But in this case, a lot of games nowadays pay tribute to that character, especially Uboa. And this is in a lot of indie RPGs. They'll have a face that's similar or a character that's similar. Everhood, the final boss, is these. Or the second to last boss. And they have them all over the place.
If you've ever heard of or played I'm Scared, the like central monster is effectively is basically an Uboa-like.
Yeah, and literally in the Halloween ROM hack, there was literally just Uboa was in the hack.
I didn't actually know that.
So
that's great.
You can't deny that Gaster, the guy who is here, is based off him.
Yes.
This is WD Gaster, or Wingdings Gaster. He speaks in Wingdings.
Yes, beware the man who speaks in hands.
As the ferryman says.
Yes.
The dog ferryman. So, yeah, like, he'll appear based on your fun value. He will say something in Wingdings and then disappear.
So, he doesn't actually say anything in Wingdings.
Oh.
There's a door that you can go through that, like, he will just be in there. And after a while, like, you know, after 10, 15 seconds, his eyes open. And he, like, there's, like, a blue, and he like, fades out. The Wingdings, very specifically, there is one missing note in Alphys's lab, in True Lab. I think it's, like, note 17. You cannot find it anywhere, but in the files of the game, you can find Gaster's note that talks about the core.
Yeah. Yeah, so... there's a lot of mystery surrounding Gaster. The other grayed out characters mention him sort of, but not really, but sort of. There's also a basement to Sans and Papyrus's house.
Yes.
And in the basement, there's like a picture of a third brother.
And yeah, yeah.
You might be able to see how these connect. You know, it's somebody who supposedly speaks in another font, much like Sans and Papyrus. WD Wingdings. Ding Dong, who is it? And there's like leftover remnants of some experiment in the basement, and this where to talk about it.
So okay, I think the core I think the generalized theory, just sort of accepted by the community with variants, is that Gaster obviously was the third of the Skeleton Brothers. I think he fell into the core during an experiment.
And kind of got unstuck in time.
Exactly. And so he's like, he's in a state of like, he's in a state of half existence. I'm not going to bring up Schrodinger. Only stupid people bring up Schrodinger.
Right.
That's not what Schrodinger's cat is about. You fools, you ninnies.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he's in a state of like half existence where remnants of him are in the code, but like he is not part of the game anymore.
Yeah. And so I'm not. Here's the thing. I feel like there's a lot of ways you can go with a story that is meant to be written for like theories and stuff and fan theories. And I think Gaster is cool because it's all like very hidden under the surface in a way that it took like a community to actually find all the pieces of evidence.
Yeah.
I really like ARG stuff like that because it takes a community. It builds groups of people. I feel like Gaster, there's not really a correct interpretation because there's just not enough evidence to really point towards a solution per se.
Yeah.
If anything, though, I think it just works to make a way to get you invested more into the world of Undertale.
Yeah, and I would like to actually share a small opinion here. So before there was a patch, before the patch, to get any of the fun belt on any of the Gaster things to happen, even like the ones that like will happen now, you had to manually change the fun value because there was a coding error.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a coding error. You are supposed to be able to like run into these random NPCs just genuinely randomly. I actually think Gaster worked better when there was literally no way to actually interact with any of the like NPCs, because like giving hints that there's something in the code works for a lot. Like giving those hints that there are alternate routes works for the main story of Undertale, the main three paths. I feel like Gaster works so much better as this like creepypasta theory ARG style thing when there is actually no hint that he exists.
So I'm kind of halfways about that. I do agree it's kind of cool. But personally, I like the image of somebody who has no clue stumbling upon Gaster and being completely scared.
That's fair.
I think that's more of the, like, somewhat creepypasta aesthetic that Undertale tries to go for sometimes.
Yeah.
And additionally, I feel like for it to be a, like, ARG-ish secret collect, I feel like having a more prominent trailhead is good.
That's fair. That is a fair point to bring up. I still have my opinion. I'm still going to. That has not changed my opinion.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. I'm not about to.
We can see the other person's perspective.
Exactly.
Maybe you, the listener, can come up with your own interpretation from that. Your own standpoint.
Actually, this just vaguely reminds me. Do you remember the X and Y Ghost Girl event? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ran into that at 3 a.m.
Do not call the X and Y Ghost Girl at 3 a.m.
Literally, I was like trying to find a random shopkeep, and I just ran into the Ghost Girl, and I was so fucking freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, remember the Hell Valley Sky Trees?
Oh, the Hell Valley Sky Trees.
I think Gaster is like that. There's sort of a lot of games that are kind of classic games to some extent, that not necessarily based on age, that have like a creepy hidden secret. And it feels like Gaster is almost a tribute to those so much as it is joining the legacy of those.
Yeah.
You know, top 10 creepy Easter eggs in video games. It's like, you know, there's Ghost Girl, Hell Valley Sky Trees. They did it again in 3D Land with the funny ghost house ghost face ghost.
Although, yeah, the Hell Valley Sky Trees, if I could ask fucking someone on that game one question, I genuinely want to know, like, what was that? Because, like, yeah. I don't think it was even meant to be like, ooh, let's add a creepy Easter egg. Like, I swear it just was supposed to be part of the skybox, and then everyone was like, is that the shadow of Mario's disapproving father?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was meant to be something kind of creepy, but just, like, no other, you know, no other sort of expansion or anything. No other details to it.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, in some ways it feels like Undertale is a game Toby Fox wanted to make, which is a dumb thing to say, but like, I feel like if I were to make a game, I would put in all this cool stuff. Like, somebody who loves secrets in games and loves funny characters and loves meta humor.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if there's one thing, it feels like Toby Fox wanted to make the game the way that it was made, put these things in the game.
Yeah, there were no concessions, there were no, like...
Well, technically there were concessions, in a very grand sense.
Yes, like...
And I'm not talking about Sans selling hot dogs.
It was not the game Toby Fox wanted to make, but of the game that he eventually, that he like took those concepts from, he turned them into one perfectly cohesive product.
Yeah.
And now we're getting kind of what is basically the game that he wanted to actually make, which I'm actually really happy for. I'm happy that an artist got the recognition he did, and then could go on to make basically his dream project. Although, I don't think he was expecting to get this much attention.
Yeah.
He has multiple times stated that, like, he did not expect Undertale to blow up into the worldwide status recognizable by literally, like, just so many people, even not in fandom culture or video game
he
culture.
He went to Sakurai's house and played Smash Bros. With him.
Didn't actually know that.
You didn't know? Literally, in the direct where they announced the Sans Mii costume, Sakurai was like, I actually invited Toby Fox to my house. He was pretty good at Smash Bros.
Oh my god, I never knew that. Holy yeah, shit.
It's so good.
Oh man.
I'm normally really on the fence of just theory stuff, but I think the way Gaster is done, and due to the context of the game, it feels more like a sort of just encouragement to, like, make things, think about the game, get invested in the world. And it's easy to call the, like, AUs and stuff cringe because fanfic, I don't know, but, like, there are people who did get invested in the characters in the world enough to get inspired, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's a pretty good goal to accomplish as an artist, is to inspire other people to make art.
We are not cringe
shamers.
Cringe shamers, yeah.
I've posted cringe, and you know what? I like fanfic.
Yeah. Literally, the bulk of my reading these days is fanfiction. I'm willing to admit it.
Shoutouts to Wario Faces Consequences for his actions.
I do also actually think I want to bring up another little point, which is that I think what makes Gaster so interesting is that there does seem, like, even if it's not told to us, there seems like there is a canon answer to him.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to liken it in a positive sense to, like, Pets Cop. Like, we do not have all the answers for Gaster, but it seems like there is a direct line of events that happened.
There is a Toby version.
Yeah, it isn't like the J.J. Abrams mystery box of, like, your Hello Neighbors or something like that, you know?
Or Lost.
Well, or Lost.
Why was there a polar bear in Undertale?
You know what? Why is there a big sexy dog throwing ice cubes into the river in Undertale?
Well, they needed somebody to do it.
Top 10 problems with Undertale. Number 1, why are these wolves so sexy?
This wolf does not contain a lap dance. Ding.
Oh man, cinnamon sins. That was a joke I came up with.
Nice.
This recipe does not contain a lap dance. Ding.
Nice. That's good. I feel like we're getting kind of off the rails now, and it's, you know, above an hour, so I feel like it's time to wrap it up.
Yes.
Undertale is a phenomenal game in every sense of the word, game and phenomenal.
Yes. I really look forward to being able to do the Deltarune episode, because good lord, it's going to be a lot. If Deltarune 1.0 came out tomorrow and, like, it was the lamest shit ever, I would still be like, yo, Toby Fox is a genius.
I mean, the first and second chapters have been so good already that, like, you know.
Yeah. They've also been actively building on things from Undertale. Like, going back to Undertale, it's really interesting. Like, it's still good, but, like, you know, the it just got a little bit more refined in Deltarune. The bullet grazing aspect really helps it.
The combat is a lot more deep, and bullet grazing is cool. The secrets and the way they're handled is really fun, including the big twist in Chapter 2 that I think is honestly even better at being a weird creepypasta sometimes.
Yeah.
And I like the overworld stuff. You know, there's a few bits in Undertale where you dodge damage in the overworld, mainly with Undyne.
Yeah.
But it's done more frequently and a lot smoother in Deltarune.
Yes.
Also, and Deltarune has a Homestar Runner reference.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Toby Fox.
Yes.
It also, I feel like it's re-examining the themes in a much more cohesive way. Like, coming back to Undertale, I very much saw these themes of, like, the player is the enemy more. But I feel like the way that Deltarune is handling it is, like, I think in a post-Undertale world, there's a certain sect of people who might be kind of sick of, like, actually, the player is the enemy. 'Cause, and, like, which is why I've kind of constantly been saying, like, you know, if you look at games as just metrics, that's fine. Like, I play in D&D. Combat is what gives you level up experience, and combat is the most, like, actively engaging thing. You know?
And what a shitty DM to not give you roleplay experience.
Yeah, we come up and he's like, alright, you're fighting, rolls dice, 3 dragons. And then we fight dragons for 5 hours, and he's like, alright, you level up, and then we leave. No, but, like, While there is room to sort of examine games and be like, hey, can't we do things that aren't combat with the, you know, same chutzpah, giving it the same treatment as we currently give combat? Because that's what games are right now, and there's space for games that aren't that. But at the same time, that doesn't mean we abandon those systems entirely. That doesn't mean that min-maxing makes you evil. It's just sort of like, it's questions about how we examine media. I think I was talking about Deltarune. There was going to be a but here.
But, yeah.
But Deltarune is going about the sort of, like, the player is the enemy idea in a seemingly much more interesting way, in a sort of, like, modern sense.
I don't know if it is, honestly. I feel like my read on the themes of Deltarune so far is pretty different.
Possibly,
and yeah. It's really hard to tell right now. Because I feel like we haven't reached the main story, you know?
Yeah. We are only 2 chapters in and kind of really only have, like, a taste of what's to come.
Yeah. Only, like, a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
A big cliffhanger.
It's literally Chris and Susie are hanging off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. Oh, sorry. Spoilers for the end.
Hold on much longer. That's the end of the episode. We can't go any further.
Nope. Yeah.
Thanks you for listening. You can follow us on social media at NatSurferPro on Facebook and Twitter. We will have new teasers coming up once we figure out what our next episodes are going to be. And so, you know, keep an eye out for those emoji teasers.
Hell yeah.
You can also follow us on any podcasting platform. Give us a like. Give us a review. Comment on what type of stuff you want us to talk about, you know? You can also follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming, where I tweet out links to the different stuff I'm working on, as well as whatever I'm thinking about. I stream on Twitch on twitch.tv/twack, twitch.tv/twak. My stream schedule's been a bit more up in the air as I'm between projects, but usually it's weekdays, anywhere from like 11 a.m. Central to 3 or 4 p.m. Central, given when I start. I've recently been streaming La Mulana 2, which is a really fun and interesting game. Kind of difficult, kind of hurts my head, but still fun and interesting. Also, I finally finished the video I was working on.
Yes.
YouTube.com/user/ I eat at Sonic. IEATATSONIC.
Yes, it's a really, really fun video.
Yes, 2021, the year of again, where I talk about some games that I liked from 2021. So yeah, if you're interested in the quick 17-ish minute YouTube video essay, check that out. More in the future.
And if you're interested in hot takes or just funny one-liners, you can follow me at Twitter and on TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GalenWLS0N. You can also find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. I'm probably going to be having a video up one of these days. I've had so many ideas, but I just need to buckle down and do one because, listen, work is tiring for me. You can also find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. Where one of these days, I promise, I will stream a Scribble Knots Nuzlocke. Scribble Knots Lock.
Knots Lock.
Knots Lock.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
With that, we're not going to do an outro for the worst bit. You just have to sort of imagine how it ended. I mean, we kind of told you it was a time loop ending, but like...
Use your brain theory.
You know what? Use your brain to come up with the R-A-U. What artists, you should be drawing Germa as Asgore.
Germagore. Ooh, no, that bad. That sounds like the horror.
That sounds like the worst Germa emote.
All right, goodbye.
Bye.
Life is pain. I hate